Okay, we resume. Hope you had something that you will help you stay awake. If your question didn't get answered, maybe you need to rewrite. Okay, so I have no idea what happened to that, but it got rewritten, so that's good. Okay, if you look at this question, there was not okay, and with Genesis 3:1-7, where was the point of sin? Now, that's a good question. Okay, I think this is something that we always need to look at. Where is the point of sin? Is it in Satan testing, tempting? Yes, for Satan. He just heaps sin upon sin upon himself. Okay? Was it in this case here, where is the point of sin? It's where we have a double thing here. It's deception and the deed. Okay? In this case here, when it comes to Adam, it is not deception, unfortunately, but it is certainly the deed. And this part of it was disobedience, no question about it. And so where is the point of sin? Each one is responsible. For Eve, it was deception and deed together. That's her point of sin. For Adam, it was not the same point of sin. There's different entry points, as it were. It will be here. Okay? At any point of time, the sin problem can be immediately dealt with if you know how to deal with it. And we should. And if we don't know how to deal with it, then at a point of time, the sin will be there. In time to come. But it is not a thought in itself that constitutes sin. It's always the deed. But where did it begin? In the heart, in the mind, in the actual act. The moment you perpetrate it, it's just like what Peter said. Why has Satan filled your heart? Where does it begin? The heart is filled. And then there is the deed. That is your problem. So that's the point of sin. Is Satan omnipresent? No. Is he here right now? I don't think so. Where could he be? We don't know. Maybe in the USA. I mean, it must be a big thing, right? Why would a big shot, you know, CEO of Satan Inc. come over here? I mean, seriously. It will not be a thing that he would bother with. Okay? It is something that we need to consider. No, he's not omnipresent, mercifully. But he doesn't need to be omnipresent because he's got a whole system worked out. Right? He's got a whole world system worked out. Remember? They are the four quadrants. Principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this age, spiritual hosts of wickedness, and all the other minions. And lots of this is here. You name it. The world is part of the system, the cause of the world, plus all the other direct attacks. It's all there. So all you need is to be part of the system. If you want to resist the system, you can. But if you don't resist the system, you're part of it. And many people are part of it. They don't even know it. And we're going to say, we're not part of it. That's how it is. Driven by the world. And we refuse to admit it. We put it nicely. Day and night we adopt the ways of the world, the thoughts of the world, the schemes of the world. And we think nothing of it. Because we're part of it. You want to resist it? You can. But it will be a battle. Okay? So this is something that we need to look at very carefully. Okay, this one is done. Why is the day of the Lord delayed? Well, you're scared already, is it? No, it is not delayed. Who says delayed? It just seems like delay because we always ask, how long, why can't, must we? You know, no, there's no delay. Okay, no delay at all. Okay, do you consider the Muslim extremists part of the spiritual principalities? No. Could it be part of Ishmael's descendants? No. No, I'm serious. The reason why is because you want to look at it very carefully. The ethnic things, what they began with, original, what it is today, are different things today. Okay? The scriptures give to us ethnicity. What happened today? The ethnicity thing is gone. No longer do we think in terms of tribes of Israel. Because they cannot tell who their tribes are. Okay? So you mustn't think that Elvis Presley is from the tribe of Levi. He was Jew. Did you know that? Yes. But it does not mean that a lot of them are. It doesn't mean anything. So ethnicity today is of little consequence today. How to trace it all the way back? It's impossible to trace back to origin. The origin now has almost no validity. It's only of interest. It's only, this could be. We are so intermixed. Okay? Can I share with you a word today? When you see people of different ethnicity, the correct word is biracial. Don't say they're mixed. It's not a nice word. They're very mixed. No, they're not mixed. God made them. So you mustn't say mixed. Or mixed blood. Please. That is so antiquated. And it's so, shall I say, uncouth. It's wrong. The key correct word is biracial. Okay? Or multiracial. Or multi whatever, rather than to look at it as mixed blood, because it's almost derogatory. So be careful of use like that. So when people intermarry things like that, it's not because there's no so called purity. There is no, technically no purity with that sense. Even when God wanted to preserve Israel, it was only because of their faith. It really because of their faith, not because of a bloodline. Okay? There is no bloodline. Israel is Israel. That's why Paul says, not all Israel, Israel. It's not a bloodline. It never was. Okay? It's really the faith line, not the bloodline. So where is Ishmael today? Nobody knows. When people become extremists, they are goaded. Let me say this very, very openly. It's not often religious. It's not often religious. Religion is just used as a fuel, as a tool, to play on people's minds and feelings and heart. Thus, people become extremes. And you have extremes in every religion. You have militants almost anything, everything. And that's how the evil one fools people into becoming people who are militant in their approaches towards life, when there is no reason to be. So it's really more, but the principalities we're talking about, unfortunately, because it belongs to a great spiritual heavenly realm, we cannot identify exactly what their works really are. We wish we had better understanding of how it really works. We don't. I wish we can tell you, this is exactly what we don't know. All we do know is that they are powerful creatures. They are powerful spiritual beings. Okay? But what is the extent of their power? We don't know. What exactly their duties are? We don't know. What is their purview? We don't know. What we do know is that they are powerful beings, and they're not to be fooled around with. 2 Peter and Jude tells us, we cannot go and scold them any old how we think, because we are in grave danger when we do that. Okay, this one. What are the principles we can apply to actively cultivate the relationship in the family, even though you recognize the weaknesses? Well, very much depends on how you want to understand how to cultivate this family thing. Okay? There are lots of things you can do. And I think that you really want to look at many, many good examples that we have within the family, you know, to want to encourage these things here. Okay? Unfortunately, you won't find from one particular family in the scriptures. You've got to do a composite study of this, a bit of this, a bit of this, a bit of this. So it really depends upon what you want to do within your own family. Okay? Very much depends on what you want to do as a family. What do you do as a family? What makes the family a family in the first place? Okay? If you don't make time, you will end up with a problem. If your pursuits are worldly, secular, and you think only in terms of making money, you're never going to be able to achieve very much. It's a question of how you understand and appreciate what a family is all about. It very much depends on what you're thinking in order to be family. I like how Jesus defines family in Mark 3. He says, you see all this? Who's my mother, brothers, sisters? Those who do the will of God. How about a family doing the will of God together? I think that would be nice. It really, really would be nice. But it's something we need to think about very carefully. What is it that we can do together as a family? Rather than not. I mean, in terms of the Lord, in terms of many things you already do in common. It's a question of what you want to do with reference to building up a family life. You want to watch TV? You could. Then we just watch TV. Do all the fogies, watching TV, falling asleep. You could do that. Or you want to do something else better than that. Very much depends upon you. You know, seriously, what you want to do in your life. When you are younger, when you are older, it's all different. There isn't one size fits all. Okay? Well, it would be nice if you all can include a bit of exercises, eat a little bit lesser. See, if it comes from me, I will tell you all these things. Do we need all those stuff? Yeah, maybe not. Do we eat so much? Probably not. Okay? But if we have a seminar or retreat without much food, nobody will come. Maybe 15 people will come, not 150. One-tenth will come. Well, again here, we have to feed you. This one is really up to you. The things that you really want to do as a family. It's your mix in your family. It's what you want to do, how you can do it together. It's really your mix. Okay? Okay, understand the context behind Peter's denial. Okay, let's look at Luke 22. And look at what this is. Okay? In verse 31, we begin. Luke 22, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon. Remember, Jesus said to him, I call you Peter. Now he goes back to Simon. That's usually a telltale sign. A telltale sign because usually it's like Jacob and Israel. If God calls him Jacob, you're in trouble. But if he calls you Israel, still some hope. Okay, so we have Simon, Simon. So we have the Lord saying, behold, Satan has asked for you. See, again here, go back to permission. Gabriel, you can see this whole idea is asked for you. Permission must always be obtained from the Lord, which we're going to study very shortly. Permission has to be asked from the Lord first, no matter how you look at it. He has asked for you, and he is going to sift you like wheat. You know what a sifting of the wheat is like, right? You put it on there and it's going to shake you really hard. Okay? Your teeth are going to rattle. That he may sift you like wheat. So what is the best thing to do? But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. I like that. Now when you have returned, strengthen your brethren. In these words, the context is very, very obvious. Now you want to ask yourself what the context is. Okay? And you see in verse 33, he said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. Wow. And he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow like this day, crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. Wow. And so this was a big issue. I think the context is where the Lord warns Peter ahead of time. Satan is going to attack you. Okay? He's asked permission to attack you. And you know what? Permission has been granted. He will attack you. Right? But you don't worry. I have prayed for you. It's enough. The work of the Lord Jesus as our intercessor is enough. I prayed for you. When you have returned, hidden in these words, is the fact that he will go away and then return. But he's not ready to listen to this yet. And then, of course, he's going to fall along the way subsequently. Right? So this is something that unfortunately is going to take place, and there we go. Now you look at Matthew 26 a little bit. Okay? And as you look at 26, and the Lord Jesus tells his disciples about the things that will occur Verse 31. Then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. It is written, I will strike the shepherd, sheep of the flock will be scattered. Peter answered and said to him, even if all are made to stumble. Wow. If everyone stumbles because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Verse 33. That's the other part of it. I will never. Wow. Those are brave words. And so Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you, tis night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Jesus, Peter said, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. We all say, we'll never deny the Lord. Nice sentiments, nice feelings, nice words. How real are those words? How strong are these words? They're not. Okay, so that is the personal part of it. And Peter and all the other disciples, they were all so sure. They are so certain. We all think, we'll never do it. We'll never deny the Lord. Famous last words. They all did. Is there danger that we could deny the Lord and fall to? Yes. Very much so. There you go. That's personal. That's Satan. That's sin. Self, sin, Satan. It's there. Mercifully, Jesus says, I pray for you. Therein is our safety net. You know, sometimes we must ask ourselves whether we really believe in prayer. The context is the confidence we think we have. The context is the evil one will attack you as he chooses it, as he chooses fit to attack. And he will mercilessly attack. Okay, but I don't think any one of us that important in this room for Satan to personally come and attack you. I think the four generals good enough. Or even less, lower than that. Okay? Sometimes no need them. The world and ourselves, enough. We scuffle ourselves. We hurt ourselves. We stumble ourselves. We can't think straight. We stumble ourselves. We feel bad. Our emotions get the better of us. We stumble ourselves half the time. So, I don't think that too much is really the worry. Okay? Thank God there is returning to Him. Thank God that we can come back and strengthen the brethren. But you must want to come back and strengthen the brethren. Otherwise, all what we've gone through is all in vain. Okay.
Pastor,
we want to... Yes,
sorry. Just in light of what you have taught us about David and Peter,
yeah.
Is it reasonable to say that these attacks are necessary for refining our faith?
When Satan wants to attack you, he has no thought that you could survive. Such is his arrogance. He thinks that he will destroy you and that's it. See, he can do a number of things. One, you're an embarrassment to the whole lot. You're the leader. You take humility to come back and say, you know, I blew it. He thinks a lot of people don't have the humility to come back. Shamefacedness is there. Foolishness is there. Failure is there. Guilt is there. You have to really wade through a morass of all these things just to come back to return to God. If you can come back, there's yet hope. But he has no idea of it. Now, a lot of times when we fall, we are tested. It's very hard to imagine what will come out of it. Because once we are caught in it, seldom will we come back. Seldom. So if you do come back, you are in a position to strengthen other people. But it's the hard part of it is to come back. That's a sad reality. When people fall, it means I don't want to be there again. I don't want to be seen there again, which is really foolish. We learn, we grow better. We are the stronger because of it. But very few people learn. That's why when people just go away like that, it just proves something. We haven't learned. Look at Peter coming back. He's stronger because of it. He was no longer the proud, confident Peter ever again. He had learned. Not very many people learn, no matter how many times they fall, sadly. So, will it help us in our faith? It's a different perspective. If I can learn from all these things, I would be better off. But I would require humility on my part to come back to God. I would need to have the insight. I would need to have the understanding. I would need the maturity of faith to be able to make good. So it's not a given. Because I'm tested, because I'm tempted, I'm therefore going to be better. Not necessarily. I can be tempted, I can be tested, I can fail, I can drop out. And many people drop out. Unfortunately. Okay, so it's not a given. It really is not a given. Anything else? Anybody want to raise up? Okay, we take up something that is going to be very, very challenging to take up. And this is called suffering. Now, most of us are not very good at suffering. Every little bit, and we say, stress, stress, stress. Pressure, pressure, pressure. Can't stand it. Oh, I need a break, I need a break. I must go on holiday. That's how we all feel. In the early days, very few people know what stress is. So today, we just give in to, and then we must see a doctor, we must see MC, take MC, and so on and so forth. Now, it might really well be that you are not well. I mean, it's possible. But most of the time, it's because we don't know how to cope with pain or with suffering. So I must encourage you to learn how to take this pain and suffering. Okay? So we're going to take up a very, very, very challenging couple of chapters to... I wish I can take the whole book of Job with you. It would take a whole week to study this book and more. But we can't. So we are going to have to content ourselves to taking a look at the first and second chapter of the book of Job, and we look at how cruel the evil one can be. Okay? Here is a man. Now, it is not because of his sin. Okay? There are four wonderful descriptions about him. Blameless, upright, fears God, shuns evil. Very hard to be better than that. Okay? Blameless, upright, fears God, shuns evil. Four things repeated again and again by the Lord Himself. Right? So, now where do we go from here? Now, here is a person who's successful. Seven sons, three daughters. Whoa. That's 10 in a row. So, I mean, that's really, really, really quite amazing. And then he had possessions. He's wealthy. Possessions, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels. Well, he's much richer than Jacob. Yeah, we were talking about how successful he was. No, this is even more. 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. This is really some household. And then his sons would go and feast in their houses, each one on his appointed day. 10 of them, you know. Every month they're going somewhere. And the last couple of months they spend at parents' house. So you just imagine, party every month. Elders to the youngest, party every month. Plus, well, let's go and see father. And then he gives another party. So 11. And then 12, well, they have to decide what they're going to do. But 11 big parties a year is quite a big thing. So they all had a big party because they can afford it. So each on his appointed day and would send and invite their three sisters to eat and drink with them. The sisters were not left out. They also went. So they all had a wonderful party time, 10 of them. So it was when the days of feasting, not a few hours, days. Okay, that would be in the days. And when the days of feasting had run their course, the Job would send and sanctify them. My goodness. After the end of it all, he would bring them, sanctify them, rise up early in the morning, burnt offerings according to the number of them all. Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus God did regularly. So you just imagine, right? 1 to 10, all the children. Then, hey, come on back every month. Come back. Special worship. Please come back. Did you get drunk and did you curse God? Did you or not? Okay, when you ate too much, stomach ache, you curse God. Okay, what happened? The food disagreed with you. Anything? Were you upset in any way? Did you even thought cursing God? Okay, well, you did, huh? Okay, well, we better pray. An offering was given. This is a wonderful father. Not very few like that. Just in case. You're not sure, right? Just in case. We better make sure, Lord, please forgive this son. Son number one, number two, number three. Well, all five together. What's wrong with you? Okay, we better make special offering for five of you. Wow. What a father. Good thing he got so many thousands of oxen and thousands of these things here. Because by the time he's through, every year he on the wall, he's going to diminish. So he's got to have a lot more than this prize once, right? He's got to increase. All right, may his tribe increase. Look at this. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves to the Lord, before the Lord, and Satan came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, from walking back and forth on it." Back and forth, to and fro. What is it? Jalan-jalan. Yeah, walk about in on the earth. Where did you go? Jalan Kayu. Yeah, they had roti prata there. You know, what did you do? Okay, this is what I did. Then God said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? None like him. Blameless, upright, shuns God, fears evil." Twice now, this is uttered. And so Satan answered and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands. His possessions have increased in the land." Wow. And I think a lot of people, they are faithful to God, they love God because of blessings. Because of hedge. What if the hedge is taken away? Would you still do it? Would you still honor God? Would you still worship God? Would you still love God? That is the big question. And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." All that he has, possessions versus person. Okay, let's take a look at possessions. So, Satan, go. Now watch this very carefully. What is his nature? He will disdain men. So you think you are, this person is faithful? Do you know why the person is faithful? Because of your blessing. That's it. And I'm afraid that he's not entirely wrong in some places. Okay? And there are places where you go down there and they promise you all kinds of physical blessings, then you will be okay. This is not what it is. Okay? Now, this is what he has done. Let's look at 13 to 17. Now, there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. A messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing, the donkeys feeding beside them, when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Wow. So property, possession are now being taken away, destroyed. This big blow, number one. Animals killed, taken away. Servants killed, disposed of. Big blow. Can it happen? Yes. Okay? While he was speaking, another one came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven." Now, this is his expression, okay? It's not that God purposely sent fire. It's just his expression. "Fire from God fell from heaven, burned up the sheep and the servants, consumed them. I alone have escaped to tell you." Sheep, servants. One oxen, servants. While he was still speaking, another came. The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, 3,000 of them, took them away, killed the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone have escaped to tell you. Whoa. Oxen, sheep, camels. Now we are taking a severe hit. There is a severe loss situation here. Okay, it is STI going down. All red, going down fast. This is serious stuff. And while he was still speaking, another came. Well, this was a big blow. "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. Suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness, struck the four corners of the house, fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you." Now, let's talk about cruelty. This is cruelty. To lose oxen, to lose sheep, to lose camel, it's really nothing much. It's just possession. It's just money. It's just wealth. Although for some people, to lose wealth like this, you go crazy. Because to them, money is everything. Unfortunately. Okay? And then, the biggest blow of all. To lose sons and daughters, all 10 of them, in one fell swoop. Then this was a big problem. Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground, and worshipped. That is an absolutely amazing situation. How can you bear such loss? How can you bear such pain? Remember, he loved them. 10 houses for all his children. One each. And suddenly, none to come home. All dead. You have no idea how serious a blow this is. Remember, what Satan said was right. It's all hatched. I know every day I would pray for the grandchildren, for my son, hatched. Protect them. Pray for them. Without fail. But of course, you have no idea how Satan will attack. Can he attack? Will he attack? You have no idea when. And his reaction, shaved his head, fell to the ground, worship. And this was his principle. "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there." The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, he did not sin, nor charge God with wrong. Test number one. It's not over. You see, we're talking about cruelty. We talk about, most of the time, our suffering, we cause ourselves. Right? Most of the suffering that we have, it's really lifestyle suffering. If our lifestyle is not good, we suffer, we brought it upon ourselves. But this one, the evil one, is involved, and he attacks. Can he attack like this? Yes. Remember, once the principle is given, he will still have to ask permission. Can he attack? Yes. But don't blame him all the time. As I said, if we are responsible for our own lifestyle, then you blame yourself rather than him. But can he do this? Will he do this? Answer, yes. I don't know, some people are broken because they've lost their money. I've seen people who are broken, once upon a time rich, and then they get broken. They literally just go to pieces. Really? It's something that we all need to appreciate. Right? In the first depression years, 1929 years, when the stock market fell in the U.S., combined with all the other disasters, a lot of people committed suicide because they couldn't cope with the losses. Now that's an important thing for us. If we were to lose everything, how will we cope? Well, he coped well. Great sense of sorrow was felt. He shaved his head, fell to the ground, but he worshipped. This was his truth. This was his principle. I came to the world with nothing. I will leave the world with nothing. And he will not say anything bad against God. Oh, that is amazing. Okay? Now, no questions. We go to the second chapter, which is even more challenging. And there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And he said the same thing. And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him. Blameless, upright, fears God, shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity. You incited me against him to destroy him without cause." Satan does not need a cause. Can you see again here? God, he says God is doing, ultimately God is the cause, that God is there. But it's Satan who perpetrates it. So you've got to balance up this very, very carefully. So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now. Touch his bone, his flesh. He will surely curse you to your face." Wow, that is serious. In other words, hey, if you lose a friend, if you lose a servant or two, it's okay. Not your skin. Skin for skin, not your skin. Right? Really, not your skin. Even if you lose children, there is great loss, there's great sorrow, but it's still not your own life. Can you see this? This is really cruel. And don't ever think that he even felt any remorse at any time. The challenge is you stretch out your hand and touch his bone, his flesh. And then he says, "He is in your hand, but spare his life." You're not allowed to kill him. Okay? You have no power over his life. But you may, as it were, he is in your hand. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Disease, illness is one of the hardest things to cope with. Can you see this? I don't know how you can, I don't know what you think what it means to cope with disease like that. What can you cope with? What can you not cope with? Very few of us understand this. And now suddenly you're told that you've got something like this. It's really, really tough. And so he was scraping himself as he sat in the midst of the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Why don't you just curse God and die? If you have a wife like that, why don't you just curse God? And then when you curse God, God curses you back and you're dead. It's over. Why don't you die? But just die." And he says, no, he's going to hold on to his integrity. This is very important, what Job said. You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. He does not agree with her. Okay? And he says, you speak as one of the foolish women. Shall we indeed accept good from God? Shall we not accept adversity? In this, Job did not sin with his lips. How's that for faith? How's that for taking suffering? Well, let's take up physical suffering. Come on. God, I don't know what you're suffering from. But we want to take it. This is something for us all to understand and appreciate. What will break you, do you think? If a loss of wealth, would that break you? What would break you? Loss of family, would that break you? Loss of health, would that break you? Three things that are very, very personal and close to us. Wealth, family, health. Not the 4 or 5 C's in Singapore. Not important. But seriously, look at this. If you were to suddenly no longer be wealthy, would it affect you? If you were to lose your children, and I think it seriously, would that affect you? If your own health goes, suddenly you're told you have cancer, would that affect you? See, most of us don't want to grapple with this. I like his integrity. He helped us. I will accept good. I will accept adversity. It's okay. He will continue to worship. He will not curse. All right, come on. Over to you three for interaction. Are you afraid? If I speak about this, will Satan attack me? See, most of us are scared. And the only way to overcome fear is to face it. See, most of us hoard. Why? Fear. We don't know how to cope with if we were to lose our health or our wealth or our family. We might just be broken. Okay? We all are basically, there are certain weaknesses in us. And these three things are identified today. wealth, our children, our family, and our health. It doesn't have to break us, but it can threaten to break us. And what was his problem? Blameless, upright, shuns God, fears evil. What's wrong with that pattern? It's a good life. He continues to worship God. He makes sure he fears God. He prays for his children. He's doing everything right. But Satan is doing everything wrong. As if he cares. He doesn't. Okay? So I'm just going to tell you that this is what he can and he will do, given half a chance. What would you do? This is spiritual battle, remember? And we are just astonished at the cruelty and the evil and the wickedness of Satan. And we will have to be far more than that. We will have to have integrity built in. We have to be to have a faith steadfast. And we've got to be able to take all these things and more. And it's something that's going to happen. You have no idea how many families have been broken in the earlier years in the mission field. People have died again and again. Many missionaries have family members slain. Their health broken. Their wealth gone. Health suffered terribly. Is there? Okay? And you want to ask, Pastor Mark, go ahead.
Pastor, it says here that the Satan struck Job with painful boys.
Yeah.
So on one hand, we have for instance, Paul, where he had the thorn in the flesh,
yeah,
and the messenger of Satan was sent to buffet him and to buffer him in a sense.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, we also don't want to go to the that extreme where you have a headache and, oh, this is from Satan. So where do we, how do we understand, or where do
you
got to
understand this. Here, in all the sufferings, this is an insight that we have. Job would not know it's Satan. The world would say bad luck. Job would not, if Job knew it was Satan, take it better, it's from Satan. He would not know. How can it be? I mean, what's your reaction? How can it be when we lost 1, 2, 3, 1, that's it. Only 3 servants left, all the rest got killed. He would not see the work of Satan. Remember, this is in heavenlies. Makes it even harder. Because if you know that it's Satan, it's easier to cope. It's easier to cope. If I know this is from Satan, okay, I know he's out to get me, okay, I can cope better. Right? I think it's harder when you don't know. Is it my fault? Then you will be self-recrimination. You'll be wondering yourself, is it something I've done wrong? And you'll be wondering all the time, was it, maybe I didn't give an offering properly. Maybe I missed something along the way. Something, it will be, you will be always examining yourself. It will really, really drive you crazy thinking about this. And he said, no. I will focus on God and I will worship him. That's really something. I said I believe in God, and nothing is going to shake my belief in God. That is his integrity. I will not curse God. Not even when a wife says, do it. In this, he's not like Adam. He said, no. He scolds the wife. You speak as one of the foolish women. We are better than that. What do you think, Job didn't quarrel with his wife? Of course he did. But there it was. There was that firmness there of faith, integrity of heart and spirit. Does that answer the question? He does not know. It makes it even harder. Because it's one after the other. You know, one disaster after the other. To lose so much wealth all at one go. To lose all his sons and his daughters all at one go. And then to lose his health. Three blows. Huge ones. Well, that is really significant. Well, family, health. I don't know which one is worse. Most of us probably cannot take one of them properly, let alone three. Difficulty. It makes it harder when it's all invisible. Of course, written for us to understand that behind it all. But we cannot say this is from Satan or not. We can't tell. We cannot tell where the attack is coming from. But we still have our integrity. Question is, what's our integrity? His integrity is, God has, if God wants to give me good, I take. If God gives me adversity, I cannot take. That's no integrity. I can take either. And both. That is integrity. That is a lot of integrity. It's a lot of faith there. Yeah. Jacob. Offer. Satan can pick anybody. See, the challenge is Satan can pick anybody. This is the whole point. He can pick anybody, including a righteous man like Job. See, that's to show you how cruel he is as an adversary. He does not say, this is a good man, but I'll destroy him, leave him alone. You have some respect for him. He has no respect, no regard. He disdains completely anyone, everyone. He doesn't care. This will tell you, this is for us to understand the seriousness, the deadliness, the cruelty of our enemy. What is the best way to survive this? It's not more wealth. It's not more health. No more children. All we have would be our integrity. Now, I don't know whether you understand, well, we all understand the whole idea, what's your integrity? And here was integrity at stake. And challenged. Answer, not going to curse God just because of some adversity. His faith in God is worth more than just the physical things on this earth. If anything happens to our children, I think we all would just about collapse. I think we all, it's fair to understand this. We all feel it, and we feel it even more dearly. Sure, we will. But think about this. You see, our children are our flesh and our blood. Anything happens to them, will affect us terribly. The question is, just how terribly? But I just hope you understand this. Your health, your wealth, your family, it's nothing is safe from the wickedness and the cruelty of Satan. So don't build your focus on all these things. They're dangerous things to fall back on. It's just simply God and all that we believe Him to be. I don't know how you all can take physical the idea of suffering, but it's important that we understand this. Okay? Go ahead.
Yeah. The word integrity, are we talking about integrity of faith, integrity of life?
It's everything.
Integrity covers faith, it covers character, it covers our mind, our thoughts, our hearts, everything about us is our integrity. You cannot separate integrity from aspects of life. We cannot say, actually in my heart I love God, you know, but in my mouth I curse God. Cannot. There is no such integrity. You know, I really deep down in my heart, I really want to be, I believe in God, but you know, because of all these things, I can't go to church anymore. That's not integrity. There is no such thing. And we must ask ourselves, why do we worship God at all? Why do we have faith in God? Is it because He's hedged us? It's because He's blessed us. And He has blessed us. There's no question about how God has blessed us. It's a question of what we are placing our faith in. Blessings, they're very unsafe things. And when I talk about blessings, I'm talking about the wealth and the health and the physical things of life. Deep down, it must be what our heart believes in with all that we have, all that we are. Okay? So that's Job. Now, of course, there are lots and lots of things that we can study, but let's take up another aspect over here, and we are now looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Okay, we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and we're looking into the New Testament time now, and we are looking at how Paul was attacked. And I really appreciate, right from the start, his insight. And he said, lest I should be exalted. Okay? Lest I should be exalted by the abundance of the revelations given to me. Okay? Now, this is interesting to say, he says, lest I should be exalted. Exalted by whom? And the word here is exalted by himself. He gets a pretty inflated opinion of himself. And most of us have the same problem. We think we're pretty good. We like people to tell us we're pretty good. Okay? Good, maybe. Pretty, maybe not. Okay, so we have a situation, and he knew this. So he said this was, he had a thorn in the flesh. Now that's an interesting thorn. Please do not think it's a small little sliver. Paper cut. It's not. It's not a little splinter. Cut, so painful. No, this is not a splinter. Okay, this is a sharp pointed stuff. So please imagine it's much bigger and it is hurting really badly. Okay, a thorn in the flesh was given to me. Okay? Wow, this is interesting. He was given the thorn in the flesh. And then we read, to buffet me. The word buffet literally means to beat me. Lest I exalt myself. Lest I be exalted above measure. Is there a danger for Paul to exalt himself? Oh, yes. From a blasphemer, persecutor, insolent man, to apostle par excellence. That's huge. His miracles equal that of Peter. The demon said, Paul, we know. Jesus, we know. Wow. That's not a small thing to say. Can you see this? So when we look at all these events, when we look at how he became a founder of churches, how he became a missionary, how he became a writer, how he became all these things, well, his head can get a few sizes bigger than he would expect. Okay, it will not be a size 8. It's going to be a size 12 on the head. Lest he be exalted. And he knew the danger was there. And so, as thorn was in the flesh, and he calls his thorn in the flesh a messenger of Satan. The word messenger simply means an angel of Satan. Okay? And this particular angel wallop Paul. That's the word buffet or to beat. Literally, the idea is to beat. Now, it doesn't mean black and blue. This side black and blue. Wonder what happened. No. Obviously, it was a little bit more severe than we imagine. So, it is quite, quite painful. Can apostles get this as well? Peter sipped you. This is nothing compared to what Paul was going to get. He's going to suffer. He's going to get a beating, as it were. He's going to suffer pain. Can we understand this? Can we understand and accept this pain is going to be a part of our life? Well, this is the challenge to consider. I don't think that this is in any way less than Job's thing. Right? He's got no 10 children. He doesn't have the wealth. Correct? But he's going to get pain. Beating. Pain. Physical suffering. Obviously. Many of us don't know how to take physical suffering well. What this is, we don't know. I wish I can tell you. And many, many things have been offered. We don't know. But I don't think we can tell what it is. So some people think because last time he was killed, the eyes were affected. I don't think so. When God healed him, he's healed. I don't think that's a problem. What is it? We don't know. What we do know is painful though. Yes.
Pastor, how did Paul know that it was from Satan?
Well, this one is because of apostolic insight. It is. This is how close the apostles were to Christ. The Lord would tell him. And he accepted it. See, on the one hand, we don't know, and it's hard to bear. Now, if we do know, it's not easier. Right? Some people like to know when they will die. Really? You want to know? I'd rather not know. Because then you start counting the days. Oh, like this. I mean, it's terrible. Even when we say 3 score years and 10, then we are, wow, then I got to count 8 years more. Or 4 score years by strength, then it's only 18 more years. It's not easy. Then every year you count 17, then 16. It's a terrible way to live. And you don't want to do that. You really don't want to do that. You want to focus on the Lord instead. So it doesn't help. But would he know? Yes. He wrote about principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this age, spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Right? Would he know? Yes. But he does not say Satan. He just simply says a messenger of Satan. He does not even dare to credit himself that he deserves the personal attention of Satan. Just a messenger of Satan would be fine. The one who likes to inflict pain. Are there torturers in that realm? Yes. Are they very sadistic ones? Yes. Are there angels? I mean, angels of Satan? They're specialized pain specialists. Yes! Unfortunately. Why do we think that he doesn't have specialists? I mean, after all these millennia, some of them are very skilled, very specialized already. But of course, they know what would make men feel the pain. Take away his money? Ouch! Take away his family, scream. Take away his health, curse God. Nope, you don't have to go that way. Job. So what do we all do? Typically, remember Paul said he was a pattern. Typically, this is what we do. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord. I pleaded with the Lord, I begged the Lord, pleaded, implored the Lord, please let this depart with me. 3 times he asked the Lord. Is it fair? Yes. And you say, but Lord, you know, I can serve you better. You give me health, I can serve you better. Don't have pain, I can serve you better. See, we try to tell God how his job. You know, our reasoning, we are so perfect in our reasoning. Not really. And so he had said, and God said, well, let me tell you something. Okay? And he simply said, my grace. Okay? My grace is sufficient for you. That's it. What? You're not going to hedge me? No. This pain is not going to be lesser? No. You're giving me grace? That's it. Wow. Yes. My grace is sufficient. Every time the pain comes, you will turn to me for grace. And I will give it. And it will be sufficient. Okay, it will be enough for you, Paul. That's it. See, my strength is going to be made perfect in your weakness. So when people look at you, they will see weakness, but they will see strength. And they will know this strength is not from you. This strength is from God, because nobody else can give you this strength. Okay, Albert, go ahead.
In this scenario, God is trying to humble Paul.
Oh, not humble Paul. He's already humble. He's scared that he will become exalted.
Yeah, correct. God is thinking that he may become, his head may be swelled.
Yes.
Why doesn't God deal directly with him rather than use Satan to deal with Paul?
Because this is what spiritual warfare is all about. You see, because Satan will take the advantage and hit you. He gets involved. He likes to get burned. He's a busybody. He will hit you. You see what I'm trying to say, Albert? He will hit you. He sees your weakness. He will hit you. Whatever your weakness is, He will hit you. He wants to get involved in your life. God has His own plans. Okay? But He will come. And katsiao, we call it. And He will disturb you. He will. Give Him half a chance. Sure?
And just like, stab Satan, then run on, no need to fight.
Sorry?
How come?
Why won't what?
How why won't God just zap Satan,
yeah,
and then we all no need to fight?
Yeah, that's what we said earlier. Why won't God zap? Why is God? And we will never, never know what God's grace is all about. God is not about to zap anyone. Okay? He doesn't have a zap plan. He's going to let. This is life. Okay? In life, you know, if we all zap all the wicked people in the world, this world is going to be very underpopulated. We're going to zap. The lords of this world will be just filled with cockroaches. We can't. There will always be all kinds of. It's not going to happen that way. Sorry. I wish we would. I know it's painful, it is hard, but will God make it easier for us? Answer is no. Will God zap your enemy away? No. You drive, somebody gets in the way, zap, gone. No. It's not going to happen. Okay? You're going to hit somebody, yes. Why did a person break suddenly? It's going to happen.
Pastor?
Yeah, sorry.
So with regards to those like sufferings, okay, let's say for some, I mean we do know of people who forsake God or turn away when they go through terrible sufferings.
Right.
Is that therefore an indication that this person has actually no genuine faith?
We don't know. I wouldn't want to say that simply because we don't know how we will all cope. I would rather not comment on whether when someone falls away from the faith, whether the person has got genuine faith. We don't know.
If to rephrase it, then if a person truly have genuine faith, will we therefore not forsake God?
I don't think it's just genuine faith. I think it's great faith that's needed. You could have genuine faith but not great faith. Your faith could be genuine insofar as believing in God is concerned, just not great. And Jesus looked at the man, the centurion, and he says he's not found such great faith in the whole of Israel. There are millions of people in Israel, and a Gentile centurion has greater faith than all of Israel, including his disciples. Do they have genuine faith? Yes. But their faith is like mustard seed. Nothing to talk about. Only seed, not even mustard. Only seed. Great faith is what we're talking about at this youth conference. We want to talk about having great faith. This is great faith. I can take suffering. I can take pain. I can accept this. God's grace is enough. His grace is sufficient. I do not know whether Satan is the one attacking me, a messenger of Satan, as it were. But I know the thorn in the flesh is painful. But I am not going to quit. I'm not about to quit just yet. Yeah.
This in Corinthians. The 12:10.
Yeah.
This particular sentence seems to be like, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities. Can I almost interpret that as almost a privilege to suffer?
It's not too much privilege. The word take pleasure really begins with an understanding. See, we all of us have different paths to take. Okay? All of us have different paths to take. For some, it is this. For another, it is that. Okay? It's something that we really, really can't tell which path we are going to be taking. We just don't know. Okay? But Paul says, however, this is what he has learned. The word take pleasure doesn't mean that he is masochistic. Wow, not enough pain. Come on, give me more pain. That is not what it means. This is not rejoicing in more pain. No. Okay? I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproach, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses. No. He's not saying, well, I haven't suffered enough. Let me suffer more. No. It comes with it. Okay? I mean, seriously, it comes with it. Did different people suffer different things? But suffering is part of our faith. Philippians 1:29 tells us. It is given on behalf of Christ not only to believe on His name, but also to suffer for His sake. We're not afraid of suffering. And suffering can come in life circumstances. It's a question of how we take the suffering. If that suffering is there, it's there. If it is not there, don't ask for it. You mustn't, hey God, you forgot my suffering, please. Don't tempt God. Don't, oh yeah, oh yeah, huh? Oh, God. Okay, then Satan says, here is the suffering, you're me? Okay, I take over. Then we would, enter into serious difficulty for no good reason. The point of it all is this. Okay, this is what Paul was saying. I take pleasure in all these things here. Now, it's how we understand this. I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. That's verse 9 first. First, are you really taking it well? Seriously. Because if you are taking it well, then the power of Christ is truly upon you. So if the power of Christ is not upon you, you're not taking it well. And this suffering is going to undo you. Now, right, I hope you understand what we're talking about. Paul became a greater thinker, a greater writer, a greater servant of God as a result of all these things. Thus, you see the power of Christ in a person. If a person merely suffers and moans and sighs and God has picked me and I'm suffering. You know, yesterday I suffered a headache. Today I suffered toothache. Did you brush your teeth? You didn't. Then you cannot say it was Satan or anybody. It's yourself. How about brushing your teeth a little bit more? You know, we cannot blame Satan for everything. But if you are able to demonstrate the power of the Lord in your life, there you can say what Paul said. Until then, let's not say that we are taking pleasure, because we're not. Really? You look at your life, there is an energy, there is a dynamism, there is a upbeat about it. Rather than just tiredness and jadedness and what? You see what I'm trying to say? So this is important. You are sharper, you are better off. So he can say, I would rather boast in my infirmities, the power of Christ may rest upon me. Then he went on further to say, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, you have to demonstrate strength and demonstrate power. Where is the strength? Where is the strength of mind? Where is the strength of heart? Where is the strength of faith? Where is the strength of emotions? Where is the strength of life? Just being able to take it doesn't mean you're strong. There has to be that power that enables you to rise above. One, integrity. Still, blameless, upright, fears God, shuns evil, still in worship, still in strength, still in joy, still in power, still in service. There is real power and real strength, and suffering has not affected you in any bad way. There is real strength. And that was what Paul demonstrated. That's why he wrote to the Philippians, and he could say these words: rejoice in the Lord. And he was in prison. Again, I say, rejoice. He tells them, I'm writing to you, I'm praying with you, for you with joy. He says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, making mention of you in all my prayers with joy. You can say that? You're thinking of other people? Or you're thinking of yourself? Ah, woe is me. Now there is real power and real joy. No zapping of Satan. See, I mean, this is what it is. This is what makes us strong. This is what it is. This is how we want to bring our children. We make them strong. We make them capable of coping. We make them discerning. We make them capable. Rather than every little thing, I can't cope. I hope this is a little bit clearer when we talk about personal suffering. Is Satan involved? Yes, but we cannot always see his hand. Okay, will God allow you to go suffering? Yes. Will there be instruments of messengers of Satan who will attack you? Yes. I just hope that we are able to understand all these things. Because many of us really don't know how to cope with suffering. And I'm afraid that you just cannot cope with suffering because you just start with coping with suffering. That's how we teach our children. We learn to cope first. And if we can learn how to cope with suffering when we are young, we can cope with suffering when we are much older. But we can't cope now. When life really hurls bad things at us, we will collapse. So bring up children well. Teach them to be strong. That's why Paul tells Timothy, be strong in the Lord, in the power of His might. How true. Okay? All right. Yes, John Lewis.
Is there a biblical definition of suffering? I think the example...
Biblical suffering.
A definition, because the examples in the Bible are persecution.
I think the best example rather than definition is the suffering of Jesus. Let's turn to Hebrews 2 where you see this very, very clearly what this suffering is all about. I think this is a very, very clear way of looking at suffering. Okay, let's take a look. Verse 9, that famous verse. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. Death is our greatest sorrow. I mean, you just think about what death means. You think of your own death, and then you think about leaving a little girl behind it. It brings terror to the soul. Right? We don't know how to cope with death easily. The moment you learn to love someone, to cope with death is always painful. And yet He came for the suffering of death. Okay, this is the first part of it, the suffering of death. Second part of it. Verse 10, it was fitting for Him, for whom are all things, by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. Through suffering. Suffering was planned by God. Jesus must go through sufferings too. For this is the lot of mankind. We will suffer in life. Okay? The sufferings can and will come. But do we go further? We're talking about this suffering that He must go through. And most of us cannot accept suffering easily. It's a part of our life. Part of the suffering began, Genesis 3. And the suffering continues with life. Right? And the suffering will be there. You can't escape this. Until it leads to death. And many people are afraid of suffering. And a person who makes us afraid of suffering is the devil himself. Look at verse 14. Okay? Inasmuch as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, He Himself likewise shed in the same, that through death He might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. And Satan knows we are afraid of suffering. He knows that we are afraid of dying. We are afraid of death. And the only way you can break that bondage of fear of suffering and death is for Jesus to teach us how He dared to suffer, how He dared to die, and thus break the power of the devil. A lot of us are just not ready to die. And that's a reality. We all pray. If our children are seriously ill, we'll give anything for the health of our children. That's when we call Pastor Charlie. Otherwise, don't talk to him. But when family is seriously ill, better call Pastor. And I'm supposed to pray for a miracle worker. I'm not. I don't have such powers. I wish I did. I don't. We will have to take the suffering. We must learn. We really must learn. Right.
Sorry. Go ahead. Just ask a follow-on question.
Sure.
I guess my question was actually about how do you... Sometimes we're just going through stress, right?
Yeah.
How do we... is there a criteria that we can use to say
draw
this
strength.
Is suffering? No, because...
Can I take suffering?
No. It's not about taking suffering. How do you know what is suffering? Can we call like the stress we go through suffering?
And you're right. Some people, you call it suffering?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. So I ask you, you call it suffering? Absolutely.
What is suffering?
I feel a bit... People ask me, how's my leg? Is it painful? Of course. Is that suffering yet? Is pain equal to suffering? For some, yes. Unfortunately. But is it really suffering? They always ask me, scale 1 to 10. Doctors always ask you, scale 1 to 10. What is it? And I said, not very much. Oh, not very much. Then it's okay. That's the worst part. What is your scale? I don't know how to measure the scale, you know. They always tell you 1 to 10, huh? Yang Hong, true or not? Then you ask you pain, can or not take? You see, if they themselves don't know how to suffer, we all take, it's okay, 2 only. But today, why? It should be 8. Actually, yeah, what's that? That's nothing. Because they're used to it. Then, oh, no, no, you better, it's 8. You see, it's sometimes what they say and what we think, what we feel. So suffering, you want to talk about suffering, it literally, you see, some people don't feel much. Unfortunately. Really, really unfortunately. But pain is what is going to really cause a wrenching of, can I say, a wrenching of the heart. Pain is where the loss is so severe, you are speechless. You will never know the pain till you literally feel the pain in the heart. And you think, wow, this is really, really hard. When my son told me, he says, Dad, I'm in Colorado. I said, okay. Then I'm in hospital. What? What happened? He said, Dad, don't worry. Just sit down. I said, well, I broke my leg. Huh? What did you break? I broke my femur. You gotta be kidding. I said, it's okay. The surgeon did a surgery for me. Put a titanium rod inside me. Just like that, huh? Whoa! The heart just dropped. Now, who's suffering? He or me? He or me? I think the parents suffer worse. He's only got pain. I suffer. I mean, you know, it's very hard to pinpoint what exactly it is. And he says, Dad, I really am okay. He says, this is okay. Don't worry about me. I'll be okay. And next week, he says, I'm dead. I'm out of hospital. I said, what are you doing? Oh, I still got work to do. Huh? Oh, you don't get leave. No, Dad, I really got to do this piece of work. I've got to do teleconferencing. What's wrong with you? Nothing wrong. He has learned how to take suffering. He's learned how to take pain in his stride. And I'm glad for him. I really am. He always scares me to death. When the telephone rings, I always wonder where he is. And he said, Dad, I was blown off course, you know, kiting, and then went to an island. Ha! Why do you tell me things like that? They say, okay. Are you okay? Yeah, you know, thank God, you know, there was a trawler that came by and then rescued me. My good friends are the Coast Guard people. Your good friends are Coast Guard people. Why? Because they always rescue us. Oh boy. You know, you need to have a very strong heart when you talk to him. So if he calls me at a regular time, then I feel it's okay. If he calls me not so regular time, something's wrong somewhere. But you know, you learn. Long time ago, I learned this. One day he had a bicycle. And he said, I told him, okay, you can ride around we were living in a cul-de-sac, you know. You can ride around, okay, it's okay. You just learn to ride a bicycle. So you want to ride inside the estate, also can. Then he disappeared for 2 hours. Then he came back, all sweaty. He says, Dad, I just rode to Serangoon Garden and came back. I said, speechless. I really was speechless. And I still remember, I don't know what to say to him. So I said, Lord, this boy is yours. I don't know what else to do. I have done everything I could. His life is in your hands. I mean, what else could I do? You can't police him. You can ride bicycle just like a car, you know, the Tour de France, they're just right behind. It's not going to happen. It's just going to go down there and, you know, no matter what, it's painful. You go through all those things. Or when he has an illness, and then he had a mycoplasma problem, and he had to stay in hospital. And we have the doctor told me, you know, he's got pneumonia, his lungs covered. What do? You learn what it means to do what Paul wrote when he said, my grace is sufficient. You say, God, I will take this. Your grace will be sufficient for me. And I will find that grace. And I will find the strength. I will cope. Or when he's asthmatic and he cannot sleep at night, put him down, he wakes up. He cannot breathe. So you carry him every night. You walk and you pace. And you talk to God and you sing. And you say, Lord, your grace is sufficient for me. And he finally sleeps. Wee hours in the morning, and the day breaks, and work begins. And you do this night after night, month after month, year after year. And you learn what it means to have God's grace and God's strength with you. Well, what was one good thing that comes out of it? A wonderful sense of love for each other. This morning he called me. And he was asking about the retreat. And I told him about it. And I'll tell him that I love him. And he will tell me, Dad, I love you too. That's okay. It's worth it all. It's worth the suffering. Not easy, let me tell you. Many tears. I recall these things and tears come. Really. I shared many things with my son. I spoke to him recently and I said, Dad, would like you to do something with me when you're back home. Our theme for November, December is Behold, this is our God. I'd like you to share with me the pulpit. Share with me. We will share. This is our God. And he said, I'm looking forward to that. I'll be very, very happy. I waited 36 years for this moment to chair service with him. It's worth it. We can say, this is our God. We share the same God. And he's been with us all through our life. The pain is worth it. The suffering is worth it. The sleepless nights worth it. The prayers worth it. The tears worth it. I take pleasure in infirmities. But remember, there must be that power, there must be that strength. Without that power, without the strength, we cannot speak of privilege. It's only in your mind. Where is that power? Where is that strength? Does that help? So what you go through, don't be afraid. What you go through, not just in goodness, in blessing, in hedging, it's in the pain and the suffering too. And don't look for it. But be ready when it comes. Go ahead. Tell us your name, please.
Hi, my name is Flora.
Flora.
Yeah.
Okay.
My question is, there are people in this world who suffered and live in poverty since they were born, and there are people who have been living in prosperity since you were born. So yes. This unfairness in this world, is this yes. also part of God's plan to let us experience His grace?
No, I don't think that first and foremost, we take one thing at a time. When we are born where we are, who we are, it's not really a question of fairness or not. It's a question of what we reap, what we sow. If our parents are responsible, then we will reap the benefits of their work. If we are not responsible, then our children will suffer for us or with us for our sake. But it's not because it's unfair, it's because we have created the situation. Okay, making sense to you?
What about the children who were born disabled?
That's
it's not their responsibility.
You see, this is the thing here. Again, here we look at the poor boy who whose maid made him drink some stuff tonight and burn his thing here. He's now 13 years old and he cannot speak at all. He has never tasted food. You know, when you are born that way, you know, you never know what you miss because you never had it. You see, in our mind, we think of people who are disabled in that sense, who are disabled. You look at the Paralympics, and you just realize that you can't do half the things they do. Look at them play basketball. Most of us see that, better die now. We are thinking in terms of how to commit suicide better. Which is the best way to commit, is to ensure that we will really die. No, they are just absolutely amazing, teaching us, like this man born without arms and legs, this Vyachik fellow. Are you familiar with this is life? He was born without arms, without legs, and he tells people, I can live, I can sing, I can be independent financially. And he lives up to his word. He has his own house, he's financially independent, he still has no arms and no legs. He had a hard time, but he went to university, graduated. I think it's a question of how we look at it. I think a lot of us, I like what this blind lady who said, Helen, what's his name? Yeah. And then that she, what's that, Helen who? Keller. No, Helen Keller. No, Stellan Rice, she's not blind. She's husband died. Yeah, Keller. Helen Keller. And Stellan Rice is a writer whose husband committed suicide and she made her living out of her poems and all that. Out of adversity, good can come. It's how we look at life and how we teach people how to look at life. I was born asthmatic. My son was asthmatic. And I said, the doctor said, 70% of his problems are from you. I said, okay, I accept that. But I will build him. I will do my part and build him to give him strength. So we focus on building him. He swam before he walked. And he has become bigger and stronger than me. We will do our part. We will not take this as a setback. We will find answers. And this is important. This is what we want to try and do. So we build him up. And do whatever we can on our part to build him up. We will not teach him. This is a setback. Asthma is nothing. My eye doctor was very, very careful. He says, I'm going to give you some eye drop. You got asthma, right? And I say, yes. Someone make sure that the eye drop I give to you are not beta blockers. So, is that dangerous? He said, yeah. One patient had this problem. Didn't tell him that she had asthmatic problem. Put an eye drop and suffered a triggered off an asthma attack just like that. Because of beta blocker. I said, is that really, he can do that? He said, wow. Well, I'm glad he's looking out for me. You see, we do our part. But we are going to have a lot of challenges on our part. What is handicap? I think all of us have gone through a lot of things. But we will not see ourselves necessarily as handicapped. You see, the once we say to a person, I mean, we use this, you know, to it happens in life, the thalidomide people. And then they said, you want to be pregnant, you cannot have children, try this drug. And it wasn't fully tested. And then whole generation that time, post-war, children born without arms, without legs. And it is a heartache, it's a heartbreak. It really is. And we learn through all these hardships, through all these challenges, we learn as a society to learn to care for them. We learn as a family to be stronger. We say, he ain't heavy. He is my brother. That's how we cope with all these things. The difficulties will always be there. We don't know what difficulties will come our way. They will come. It's a question of how we cope. And we learn as a family to cope. There will always be these difficulties, either now or later. Yesterday, I saw a beautiful car. It was called Kangoo. It was a Renault brand. I didn't know that this brand was it's an ugly car. Now it was beautiful to me. It's as ugly as my car. Now it's more beautiful than mine. Wow, I saw this. It was an amazing car. It was in Camden. I was there a couple of days ago. And there it was. There was a man sitting behind there. And the driver came out, opened the back there. And then it was able to descend down very nicely. All electronic, all push button, and it came out. And it was, I had never seen a car as beautiful as that. Suddenly, it is beautiful. Actually, it's ugly. You know, I'm just looking at people who have gone through so much. I used to minister to people in a blind school. So when I first went to the blind school, I wondered why their toilets got no doors. And I wasn't thinking, why would they want to have toilets with doors for? I wasn't thinking. So one day, we brought them to a church Christmas party. I was bringing the boy home. The pastor said, can you bring him home? I said, sure. So he was living in Seligi. So he said, okay, I'm going to wait for a car to stop. We're going. And he was crossing the road. I had to catch up with him. I said, did you know? No, don't worry. I know his road. Oh, really? Where's your house? I said, don't worry. He walked left, he walked right. He didn't stumble. I fell. Who was handicapped? You know, I was absolutely amazed. And I am just really, really absolutely amazed at these people who appear, as it were, handicapped. Helen Keller said, there aren't people so blind as those who have eyes and they do not see. That's how she saw her blindness. One day she was asking somebody to sing. But she cannot hear properly. She put her hands onto the neck of the person. And the man sang. And she said, that was so beautiful. You try and see. You put your hand on somebody's neck. The person is you and trying to kill me. You see, there is that beautiful ability of the Braille system. And most of us, I have tried very hard to look at Braille. I really, really don't know how to look at Braille. I've seen people who have used their tongue, or read about people who have used their tongue to read Braille. How? I have no idea. You know, when I look at people who are like this, I go away with greatly challenged because I am not handicapped in any way. And and you come away so strong. Laura, this is how we ought to be challenged. I don't see it as unfair. I see it as simply life. And it's a question of whether we want to make in the airport a line for them, specially challenged people. And I say good for that country. Wonderful. I mean, it's really, really. One day I saw a pastor, an old friend of mine, and he was in a wheelchair, and he was going to India. So I said, how come you're going to India with a wheelchair? He kept quiet, and he went through it. Then I saw him in India, and he was standing up. So I said, what happened? A miracle on a trip there? He said, no. Faster. I don't want to explain how this works out. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to say too much. I'm just you know, speechless. I hope you understand this. I don't see life in terms of fairness or unfairness. It's what it is. It's a question of how can we live with whatever it is. Some people are really born with a privilege, with very privileged family. It does not necessarily mean that they're better off. There are many people who are privileged, and they are poorer off. They are worse off, because they don't know how to do anything. From here to the bathroom, several pieces of clothing, because they have no idea what to do with it. Well, there are people who just have no idea what to do anything. They cannot boil water to make coffee to save their life. Now, I'm not so sure that they are better off. Okay? So it's a question of how we look at life, rather than to speak of it as unfair. There will be privileged people. There will be people who are handicapped and challenged. It's a question of how we make that life count for God. You know, after you've seen this via Chick Chat, you know, there's hardly anything to say, because this guy is so bright. He's just so absolutely astonishing in his ability to cope with life. And after you've seen this guy speak, or you heard this guy speak, either in video or whatever, you begin to realize it could be worse. So this is one way I look at life. It could be worse. Now look at it, I could be worse. Last night after I stood up, really painful. And I tell myself, it could be worse. Today, it's true, it's worse. And then, tomorrow, it could be worse. Again, yes, but thank God. Not going to let this anything affect. Just refuse to. Therein is power and strength. Therein we practice our faith. Okay, is this a messenger of Satan? I don't know. I don't want to speak of it that way, because I don't have abundance of revelation. I have got nothing that to speak about that the evil one was assigned somebody to attack me. I don't think so. So I don't see it as anything very, very significant. It's just part of life. Okay? Suffering, pain is a part of life, and we simply accept it, move with it, live with it. That's the best way to go. Okay? When we were poor in the early days, if somebody, uncle, comes back home working late and he buys a packet of kway teow, everybody in the family takes a portion and enjoys it. Today, nobody does that. Last time, when people had engagement and wedding, they buy cake and they go to Siligir or go to town and buy some nice cakes. Today, which hotel? We are so spoiled by everything. We want to take Where did you buy your mooncake from? Palestine. Thank you. No, I don't eat mooncakes. We have become spoiled. We don't know how to look at these things here. You know, we must be, well, we look at the box first. If the box is not impressive, must be no good. Maybe the Palestinian person made it, you know. You don't know. Maybe he has a factory selling it out there. They don't tell you where they make it, but it's there. That's amazing. You know those people who produce those chocolate and then sell it at the high end? The same factory sells at the low end, brand, home brand, versus the same company. They said they don't tell you. Wow, it's so good, so good. Same. Your taste has deceived you. Okay, you know, how many of you like the chocolate cakes that Auntie Sally sometimes makes? Let me tell you, they're all home brand. No need to buy that pipe, it costs $10-$20. So it's all right. It's only $2-$3. What does it matter? And I'm serious. We all are spoiled and we become snobs along the way. Don't. Learn to be strong. Learn to be wise. We cope far better. Okay? All right, it's 6:30 already. Isn't that exciting? Well, let's pray before you go for your dinner. Our Father, we thank you for the challenge to really, really live for you. Help us to learn how to cope with all the challenges of our faith and of our life. Pray for your blessings as we try and absorb all these things. In Jesus' name, Amen.